Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is another repeat guest and a published novelist, Dan Morin. Dan, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me back on. It's always a delight to be here.
You are here for a special reason. You're always welcome on Random Trek, Dan. But there has been, you've had a life milestone this week. Spoiler alert, we are recording this before this is actually happening. But when this is posted, your first novel's been published. How do you feel?
I'm going to Disney World. No, I just came back from Disney World. Never mind. I feel, let me project myself slightly. I feel excited.
How will you have felt?
How will I have felt?
At this point.
Probably a combination of really, really excited and super anxious because this thing that I've been working on for so long is now just out there for anybody to read and have a podcast about dissecting it and telling us everything that's wrong with it, which is, you know, a little nerve-wracking.
I can imagine people, I don't know if you know this, people on the internet have opinions.
No, I've not. That's a lie. And I'm pretty sure that's not true. I'm pretty sure that they're all holograms, Scott. And
we'll get to that.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, it is very exciting, and it's something I've worked on for a long time, so I'm glad to, you know, at least bring that arc to a conclusion and move on to a new part of the story, as it were.
Oh, man. Now, here is a question for you, Dan. Well, we should say the name of your novel. It will, a link will be in the show notes so that you can buy the novel, which is called
The Caledonian Gambit.
There you go. Now, here is a question I've had. I've often wondered this, and I think I've heard it from authors before. I don't know if this is the first in a series. Is that a secret? Should I not say that?
I mean, it is the only book that exists right now, and there is a potential that more books will come. But
well,
yes.
So what did I say? I've heard this said before. If this is a series, what happens is that people spend a lot of time writing their first book, and then they get a contract. And the second book, now you have a deadline that you never had before, so there's pressure. So are you looking forward to that?
I will combat your question with a secret, which is that I've already written the second
book.
I got ahead of myself. I had some spare time in all the years that I spent trying to sell the first book. So I'm like, well, I'll go ahead and write a second one, which I don't necessarily recommend doing because, as it turns out, if that first book never gets sold, you just wrote a second book that may or may not be unsellable.
Yeah, that's hard to sell the second book in a series if the first book has not been sold.
Yeah, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing it that way, but that is what I did. Whether or not that book will actually be published is kind of a question mark at this point.
Who knows?
But there is a draft of it. And then at some point, there may be more books in that series, which I would then have to write because I haven't gotten that far ahead of myself.
You're not on book five of your series.
I'm not on book five of my epic science fiction. not quite yet. So I have ideas. Like it's all sort of like sketched out very roughly. Like, all right, this is where this would go. And I mean, the pressure and anxiety comes from if I'm lucky enough to be able to continue on writing this series, I have to turn those sort of roughly sketched ideas into a full-fledged plots that are not only satisfying in and of themselves, but are part of a larger story that is also satisfying. So that's, wow, okay, I'm not going to sleep tonight. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. That's what I do here. Since I've not written a novel, I just like to inject these worries into successful novelists' heads so that I don't feel so bad about myself.
Please don't inject anything into my head. That's very frightening.
I can't make that promise, Dan.
Well, I was the worst.
I'm excited for you, Dan. I pre-ordered the book way back when I could first pre-order it. I'm not going to pre-order it again because I already pre-ordered it, but
I pre-ordered it.
I will re-pre-order it and I will read it. And I don't know if you want me to tell you if I like it or not, but I will just tell you that I like it even if I don't like it. So now you will have no idea what my real opinion is when I tell it to you.
This is what I always say. You don't have to like it. You don't even have to read it. You just have to buy it.
Just send me your money directly.
That's my motto.
Well, I've bought it. I'm excited to read it. One of my other friends, who was actually on the show, Eric Smith, wrote a young adult novel, and of which I don't really like young adult novels, but I bought it, and I read it. So there you go.
Nice. Very nice.
I won't say if I liked it or not, but I bought it, and I read it.
So there that's,
you
go.
Well, that, you know what? Speaking from, I can only speak for myself as an author, but I can imagine, you know, talking to, having talked to other authors, we would probably all agree that buying it is pretty much, there is no obligation beyond that. I mean, you're not in any obligation to buy it, but like at that point, we got nothing, that's no beef.
The transaction is over. You're happy. You've got your royalties or what have you, and yeah, it's fine. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. The cover is also quite attractive, so good job.
Thank you. I did not draw it.
What? I saw your drawing, and it looked almost indistinguishable from the final cover.
And you are not good at seeing.
I did not have my glasses on, and I was squinting. But
it is a beautiful cover, and our cover artist did a fantastic job with it, and I'm very, very excited about that.
I am excited. And you know, I think that not enough science fiction novels have spaceships on the covers anymore.
I agree.
And I'm being honest about that. That sounds slightly facetious, but I'm being honest that it seems like it's kind of gone away from having spaceships on covers. I don't know why. I'm sure there's a reason. But
what is better than spaceships? I mean, I don't understand.
I don't know. The only thing that could be better is a spaceship with a robot that you could see like through a window or something. That's what
waving
I want.
Waving at you.
Exactly.
Nicely.
With a smile. Join me on my grand adventure.
Guess now I have to put a robot in the next one. Jeez, thanks.
You're welcome. Now, Dan, we're all excited. People go out and buy Dan's book. Buy a couple copies, unlike me. Go to the bookstore, any in your local bookstore, and if you find Dan's book, just take it out and put it cover first. Move some other books, like George R. R. Martin's books don't need the attention.
Which will be near my book, I guess, alphabetically speaking.
That's true. Yeah, so he doesn't need
those aside.
The attention. He's got enough money, so just give Dan a little chance. All right, thanks. George.
Appreciate
sheesh.
Easy, George. He might kill me, though. Like, I'm not even a character.
That's
might
true.
Kill me.
I will say I am married to a cookbook author, so whenever I go into a bookstore, I look to see if her books are in stock, and if they are, I give them better placement than they have.
I do that to some of my fellow authors, my friends' books too. So I'm with you. It's a nice little
marketing
thing you can do. Yes. A little bit of social vandalism.
That's right. So buy his book, long story short. Also, while you're at the bookstore, ask them to order my woefully out of date tech books that no one will buy, and it'll be great.
wait.
A little have to put a plug in for my own books that no one's buying. Thanks a lot, people.
We're not spaceships on the cover, Scott.
That's true. There are no spaceships on any of my book covers. It's very sad. But we're not here to talk about books or spaceships, although I guess there is a spaceship technically in this show. But we don't really see a lot of it. Well, there is that B-plot where we see it kind of knocked around a bit in a wave, ionic wave distortion field. I don't even know what it was. Fairhaven is the name of the episode, Voyager, Season 6, Episode 11. You can tell by the way I said it that I did not really care for this episode. And, in fact, I think it may be racist, but
I thought about coming on and doing my Irish accent to offend all of your Irish listeners.
That is what, and it's a whole lot of this. Oh, Fede Begora there, Catherine Janeway.
I'll offend all of your Irish listeners.
That's right. Oh, they have a wee bit, a wee dram, and tell me your troubles there, Tom Paris. So that's a lot of this episode. That's the episode.
People should stop falling in love with holograms is the short version.
That people, they should just not have a holodeck on Federation ships is what I'm saying here.
This is a working ship.
There is not a lot of work going on. Everyone is obsessed with Tom Paris's twisted version of an Irish village that everyone goes out of their way to say is super authentic, which I disagree with.
I think it would be really funny if it turned out like somebody who was like, no, Tom, no, this is, I'm a historian. I'm the onboard historian. This is all inaccurate. No one is dying of famine. I mean, like, this is a problem.
And why are they all eating Lucky Charms? It doesn't make any sense, Tom.
This is an interesting, I mean, holodeck episodes are interesting in the sense that they let you visit a realm that is outside of the realm of the show. And I should say, as a like disclaimer, I was trying to think back to the last time I watched a full episode of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly have no idea when that was. I've not seen this entire, all of Voyager. I saw most of the early, maybe two or three seasons, I think. But it also, I think it started right. When did Voyager start? 95?
Something like that. I think so.
Yeah, mid-90s. And so I think I went off to college and I just stopped watching. Like, I didn't have a TV at that point, so I was not watching a lot of TV. Oh. And so I now, I like, you know, there's like some of my notes are all like, Harry Kim, he's still an ensign after 6 years? Jeez.
He's the worst. That's the reason.
We
don't like Harry Kim, although he's not in this episode very much. He hits on a holographic lady. Tom Paris says
another hologram at arm wrestling.
That's right. And then he may scan a wavefront at some point.
Yeah, sure. That sounds about right.
He always scans something. And that's all we've got of Tom Paris. Not Tom Paris. What's his name? Harry Kim. There you go. Good old Harry Kim. So yeah, the central, so there are two stories in this episode. One revolves around the Irish town of Fairhaven that Tom Paris has holo-programmed and everybody's in love with because they've been stuck on a ship for 6 years.
It doesn't take much.
Exactly. So they have the Voyager crew, rightfully so, has a low bar for entertainment. And so people are crazy about it. And I also thought, so the Doctor, who I enjoy as a character, decides that he should be a Catholic priest, which seems a little offensive to Catholics.
I mean, he's a hollow Catholic priest.
That's true, but
let's be clear.
He does say that he's leaving to write his homily, which leads me to believe that he is saying mass.
One of my favorite I did not realize this until I looked at the Memory Alpha entry for it, and they mentioned there's a scene where one of the holograms says like, oh, bless me, Father, I've broken the fifth commandment again, and the Doctor says say 10 Hail Marys and call me in the morning, which is a very funny joke until the Memory Alpha points out the fifth commandment in Catholicism is thou shalt not kill. So apparently this guy, we have like a serial killer hologram that's out there murdering people, and the Doctor's like, nah, I never got around to learning the 10 commandments, sorry. Yeah, it's not like a basic tenet of my faith.
Skipped over that in seminary. So 10 Hail Marys, it should be good.
That's fine. It takes care of anything. It's like two aspirin.
Yes. So I was raised Roman Catholic and I'm Irish. I feel like, so here's the thing, people. I am not, making fun of people who are offended by things like this, but Irish, you know, making fun of Irish people is now kind of part of the culture. So these kind of stereotypical Irish things are no longer offensive, but I do kind of think it's a cheap writing and also not that entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with it falls back on tropes and stereotypes.
Yes.
And I mean, I think there is an interesting nub at the center of this episode,
yes,
which is that Captain Janeway finds herself enamored with this bartender, and that specifically, rather than just arguing about whether or not he's real, which they kind of do, I think the more interesting part is it actually shows her like she changes him to be more attractive to her. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a interesting like dynamic, because the Doctor on the one hand both argues like, if you feel real about this, like you should consider it real. But at the same time, you know, there's this problem of like, well, but you can also change this guy and anything you don't like about him.
Right. It's
problematic, but it's an interesting question. Like when you have this ability to change someone, and there's that was one of two lines that actually made me laugh in this episode, where the Doctor says to Janeway as they're having this conversation, it's my, like, I've observed that most people try to change the people that they love, and what's so different? And she's like, well, it actually works.
That's right. I can actually do it. He's snoring and I can make him stop snoring.
Yeah. So that's interesting to me as a dilemma. It's kind of like like Pygmalion story all over again.
And I will say, so Michael Sullivan is the character, the holographic barkeep that Janeway becomes enamored with, and he's played by an Irish actor, so at least his accent,
the one genuine Irish actor.
Yeah, so I'm glad that they picked an actual Irish actor to play this Irishman that Janeway falls in love with. Everybody else is, you know, hamming it up with their Irish accents.
Right. Oh, right. Irish, yeah, accents. Yeah, that. You can tell the main cast kind of briefly consider, there's that first scene with mm-hmm. Tom and Harry walking around, and you can't quite tell if Robert Duncan McNeil is trying to do an Irish accent or not.
I'm not really failing, or somewhere in between.
Like, yeah, exactly. So I just kind of, and it seems to go away after the first scene or so. So you're also like, all right, maybe he's just, maybe he was just caught up in the moment.
That's right.
And Harry Kim puts one on as a joke at one point. But it's, you know, way over the top. And that's about it from our no one else in our main cast really tries to do it. So
no. And you would think one of the character who would most, would you would expect to do it would be the Doctor, but he does not. He just, pretends to be a priest for whatever reason.
Slightly less offensive.
Well, depending on who you ask, I suppose. Yeah. He doesn't do anything too bad, except, of course, pardon a murderer with 10 Hail Marys. But other than that,
he's new at this.
He's new. And Chakotay, I feel like Chakotay, who is in this episode very little, is not amused by Fairhaven at all.
Seems like mildly amused that the captain is so interested in it, and he's kind of like making fun of her.
Yes,
but yeah, that's about as far as he gets into it.
And Tuvok apparently refuses to go.
That kind of makes sense.
Yes,
B'Elanna doesn't really get involved either. She's only in like one or two scenes.
Yeah, she had a problem with the warp engines, and I think that's all we heard from her. And Seven of Nine is in this, is she? Yes, she talks to Tuvok for a moment.
And then she throws all the rings on the board perfectly because, of course, she's seven, you know, nine. Part board. Yeah, that's right. So
this is an episode that once again takes the dignity of Tuvok and completely undermines it by making him nauseous.
and then Paris kind of makes fun of him for, like, we could use you as a barometer, basically, yes. Whenever you get nauseous, which is like, I realize you've been stuck on this ship way outside of Starfleet for 6 years, but that's kind of a jerky thing to say, Tom, which is, okay, you're Tom Paris, so that's what you do, right?
It's par for the course for Tom Paris. Yeah, so that's kind of in the orbit of the central plot. The folks are kind of bit players in this episode, are doing wacky things, making fun of Tuvok because he's sick, which is jerky, dealing with this wave front that's coming, and they must get shots for radiation, and nothing else is going to they're going to be stuck for a while, so they'll be bored, so they should all shelter in Fairhaven, apparently. Because, and I also thought it was weird, so that, you know, they say that this wave front is very dangerous, and they need to be on alert. But Captain Janeway is spending a whole lot of time on the holodeck.
I mean, the wave thing is really only there to set up the very end of the episode,
yes.
Right? Where something bad happens and they need to decide whether or not they're going to, you know, essentially wipe the holodeck, sort of. And, you know, that's it really, there's zero impact from it otherwise. Like, they talk about sheltering or whatever, but like, it's a storm.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, go around it.
They can't go around it. The shortest way to get home is through that storm, Dan.
In space.
three dimensions. We could go up.
Nope. Mm-mm, doesn't happen. So, you know, that's all just like MacGuffin, essentially, to support the Fairhaven plot. And that's fine. Like, you know, that's the whole thing is sort of mainly revolving around this Catherine Janeway relationship. And I think the other thing about it that I liked that was made as a really good point in that conversation with the Doctor is him pointing out, like, you are going to be lonely because you are at the top of the command structure and you can't date anybody on the ship because they all work for you. And that would be, you know, sort of like a breach of ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your options? Like, we're not going to get home anytime soon. You know, like, he makes sort of remarks about dalliances with passing aliens, which I feel like
Captain Kirk
seems like a Kirk dig.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like, you know, it is an interesting point for her. Like, it gets lonely to be the person who's in charge and who's, you know, responsible for everything and doesn't have a partner and like somebody to rely on like that. So,
that's
why
true.
Not indulge in a little
holograph,
hollow flirtation? I don't know.
Well, this is an interesting episode because the Doc, basically, Janeway falls in love with this hologram, or maybe not in love. She's infatuated, let's say. Although the hologram thinks that she's in love with him, which is interesting.
Word.
Yes. And so she spends 3 days apparently on the holodeck straight, I guess. which seems like a problem. I don't know. I would think that now, you know, I don't want to sound all high and mighty. I'm pretty sure if holodeck technology existed, I would totally be addicted to it. So,
I mean, there are people who, you know, play World of Warcraft and other video games for so long straight that they get themselves into medical trouble.
Yes.
I have no problem believing that were there holodecks in real life, we would have a lot more of that type of thing.
Yes. And that, it made me think, obviously on Voyager, they're stuck on the ship. So if they want to visit Earth, the holodeck is a perfect way to do that, both story-wise from the viewpoint of the production of the show, but also the characters feeling homesick, visit the holodeck. You can go anywhere. It's great. But that got me to thinking about people on Earth at this time. Like, do people bother going to, like, so in Ireland, do you go to Ireland or do you just walk down to, you know, a holosuite and visit, like, the perfect idealized version of Ireland?
They actually go on the holodeck to visit a spaceship lost in the far reaches of the Delta Quadrant.
So that they can get home.
Yeah. It's just a compelling story, really. No, that's a really good point, actually. Like, why go anywhere if you can just sort of summon up the virtual reality version of it and it's indistinguishable? It also, potentially, quote unquote, better than
right.
the actual thing.
Because you can
right?
control like, everything.
Right. And you don't, there's no risk, right? Like, oh, I can't, like, you know, accidentally catch some, like, I can't get food poisoning, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
or
from holographic food.
I went several months ago, I went to Ireland with my lovely wife, and we were concerned because Ireland is very green because it rains all the time. So we were worried that it would be rainy. We were still going to do a whole bunch of stuff outside, but it would be less pleasant in the rain. And so if we had gone to the holodeck version of Ireland, we could just make sure it didn't rain.
Right. Well, and they make a joke about that at some point because, like, Harry wants to add fog.
Oh, yes.
And Tom is like, no, it's Fairhaven. The weather's really nice.
And it's dangerous. Oh, fog God. Is dangerous.
Fog is dangerous. Oh, God. They live a sheltered life.
Yes. Yeah. If they're worried about fog, I don't know. And there is another interesting thing. So Tom, you know, everybody loves Fairhaven. Tom says, hey, Captain Janeway, can I have the holodeck next door to expand it to make the seacoast? And I thought to myself, why do you need
a second holodeck?
Exactly.
Well, because, I mean, based on the holodecks we've seen in earlier versions of the show, I mean, they're rooms that are large, but they're not huge, right? And so, like, if you want to go to the seacoast and I want to stay in town, like, how do you deal with that?
I don't know. I don't really – I think holodecks are fascinating, but I really have no idea how they could possibly work.
I happen to have my Star Trek technical manual right here. No, it's in the other room, but I do have it.
I have one not so far from me as well. But my question, though, is so everybody loves Fairhaven. So everybody, you would think, wants to go at the same time. And the holodeck is not big enough for the whole crew to pile in.
You'd all be standing, like, with no room between you and the next person.
And you wouldn't know,
it's like
I
being
guess.
Crowded into a bar, I guess.
And that's why Fairhaven is mostly a tavern where everyone goes. Problem
like most,
solved.
It's like playing Dungeons and Dragons. Everybody goes to the tavern.
Exactly. And stereotypical of Irish people. Thanks a lot, Tom Paris. Jerk.
This does remind me of my one favorite moment from this episode, which is the scene they're at, like, a dance.
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway and Michael are dancing, and then Janeway says, computer, remove everybody except for Michael Sullivan. Everybody disappears, and the dude is not, like, bothered by that at all. I would have to think, like, it's always surprising to me, like, what things are programmed into them to seem normal. Like, people, aliens show up, and they're like, they don't blink, right?
Yeah,
like they don't care. Neelix is working the bar, fine, whatever. And then, like, people in, like, uniforms showed up, and they don't really blink at that either, like... But, like, there's one point where Chakotay calls her captain, and he's like, did you just call you captain?
What's
like,
the deal all right, with that? Well,
I guess we noticed that. But we also don't notice when everybody gets, disappeared or when our – and in a super questionable moment, Janeway deletes his wife.
Oh, man, that is not
I saw
a good
it coming.
Point.
I saw it coming a mile away. Mm-hmm. Like, when she goes in and starts changing him, as soon as she does that, you're like, oh, yeah, just delete the wife. You're like – wow, I wondered how they were going to handle that in the show. Like, it turns out it just sort of resets him. But, like, I kind of thought, like, because she was going to go back and find out, like, oh, no, my wife just died.
That's right.
I'm a widower.
I'm like, a broken man, Catherine.
That's going to be super questionable.
And then she also makes him taller. She goes into – the one thing we find out about Catherine Janeway in this episode is that she has highly specific tastes in men because she knows that she wants him to be 3 centimeters tall, or she wants him to have
better than 3 centimeters tall. That's a very different taste in men.
Yes, that's a tiny man, which is fine if that's what you're into. Hard to find, one imagines, but not in the holodeck. That's the wonder of the holodeck.
Get that, yeah.
Exactly. But then she's super specific about the education level, which I thought was interesting. Like a third year Trinity College.
He's so annoyed that like he doesn't know who Jonathan Swift is. Like yes. When she first goes in. And I was like, okay. I mean, like, don't, you know, go easy on the guy. He's a hologram.
Yeah, I think this episode is, it has high hopes and it sets its aspirations high, but I'm not sure if it meets it. Although we do get the interesting, there's a moment where she goes to the doctor and she's like, you know, I don't know what to do. Or, well, she actually knows what to do. She's done with him. The holographic barkeep, that is. And the doctor asks if they were intimate, which I was not expecting the doctor to ask that. And Janeway neither confirms nor denies. So I just assume they were.
Yeah, pretty much.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just surprising on a Star Trek show for that to even come up.
Mm-hmm. And there's the whole issue as well of the I like that it's the doctor having this conversation with her, though, because as he points out, he's a hologram, right?
Yes.
And everybody considers him real, more or less. And again, my knowledge of Voyager is not as in depth, but my understanding from like episodes I've seen here and there is that they basically get to a point where they don't turn him off anymore and he has free access to the ship.
Yes.
So like he's essentially, for all intents and purposes, like a person.
He is, you know, a person. There are several episodes that deal with the fact that they now consider him a sentient being.
Right. So, I mean, if you consider him a sentient being, what is to stop you from, you know, having the same feelings about a hologram created in the holodeck, I guess? Like, where is your level of sentience? Where's your line?
And that's why I was thinking, because she falls in love with this guy, or is infatuated with him, because he's in love with her. Once again, I have to point this out. She is totally not in love with him, as she points out, although she might be a little bit. I figure, why don't they give, so the doctor has this thing called a mobile holo emitter, so he can walk around the ship freely. So why don't they just give good old Michael a mobile holo emitter?
It's hard to say.
It is hard to say.
There's TNG episodes that are kind of about that too, right? Doesn't Moriarty get out onto the ship at one point?
Moriarty thinks he gets out into the ship.
They put the ship inside. It's the ship in a bottle.
Exactly. And that's when of course, Moriarty is programmed by just simply asking the computer to create a holographic character that can defeat Data. So then it creates a sentient, super genius hologram, which is how easy it is, to program holograms.
Never take the safeties off. That's what we learn about the holodeck. Mm-hmm. Always leave the safeties on and leave the safeties on your heart.
That's right.
I think that's important.
But
do that.
Speaking of safeties, which is a point that comes up in Star Trek First Contact, so I think about it whenever I see a holodeck episode. There is a fist fight in this episode.
Yes.
Doesn't make any sense to me, because wouldn't they just kind of say computer freeze program, reset, so nobody gets punched and sent to the medical bay?
Yeah, maybe they weren't fast enough to say freeze program before someone got punched in the mouth.
That's right. The holograms all ganged up on the quote-unquote real people and punched them in the mouth so they could not stop it.
Simultaneously.
That's right.
It's kind of a weird fight, too, right? Because it starts over, like, Tom Paris, like, I love that he's like, I programmed the bartender never to drink. You shouldn't be drinking. And then they get into a fist fight over like why the captain has like abandoned him, and it's slightly strange. Okay.
It is. It's the big reveal, because she has not obviously told the crew members that she is canoodling with a hologram. Because I think she wouldn't tell them she's canoodling with anybody, because she's the captain.
Sure, I mean, she's the captain. She's got a private privacy. That's fine.
Canoodle with whoever she wants, damn it.
That's her deal.
But they are surprised, and they don't believe him, really. And they're like, well, maybe you misinterpreted what she was saying or doing. And he was like, believe me, you could not misinterpret what was going on.
Pretty clear.
It was pretty clear since the first time we played the rings. that she was into me.
He seemed weirdly angry during that. There was just something weird about that actor during that one scene where they're playing rings, and like, he just seems like there's an expression on his face that looks, I was like worried this guy was going to be a murderer or something.
Well, that's pre Janeway reprogramming.
Right,
him.
Exactly. So maybe she fixed that.
I think she fixed that because she saw something in him that was attractive. But she does make the point of saying he's not really my type, but I can fix that because he needs to be 3 centimeters taller and have a third year Trinity College education.
That's what women always used to say to me.
Yes, and you have to be, what does she want him to be, like feistier or something like that?
Yeah, more outspoken, yes. More confident. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really tell the difference. We didn't really have that much time with him. Like, what, if you want to change all those things, what really attracted to him in the first place?
And let's change his face completely, make him look like my boyfriend from Earth that we never talk about after the first season.
Well, I mean, at that point, it's years out, man.
That's true. I mean,
I was going to say my other question for you, I don't know if this has come up yet or not, but in my brief look into this episode, apparently they revisit this character later on.
Yes. And I don't remember. I have not seen that episode. So apparently he's in an episode called Spirit Folk.
Yeah. So they mentioned in the Memory Alpha thing that at the end of this episode, Paris is rebuilding the Holo program. And he says it'll take 6 or 7 weeks. And apparently the follow-up episode airs about 6 weeks later.
See, that's pretty nice.
This was also trivia that I learned from reading the internet. This was the first episode of Star Trek broadcast in the new millennium.
What a way to ring in the new millennium.
Woo!
Woo! Faith and Begora, it's 2000. Hoi, toi, toi, toi.
Oh, man. Well, I wonder if everybody else is still racist and Irish in that next episode.
I don't know. I might have to watch it. So it's interesting. And then, of course, we at the end, Dan, you brought this up. This is kind of the central, the moment of crisis. The Wavefront is knocking Voyager to hell. They need more power. They're giving it all she's got. But they need to divert power from the holodeck in order to save the lives of the actual crew of Voyager. So there's a moment when they're like, oh no, we can't safely shut down the holodeck. Should we divert power? And to Janeway's credit, she doesn't even hesitate because the choice.
Why is that question even asked? Oh, we're going to, our house is burning down, but you haven't saved your game on your Xbox. Do you want to save it and shut it down safely? Or... like, do you want to escape the burning house?
It's tough. I got. It took me a really hard time to get to third level on that game. So,
if it was like an original Nintendo game where you really couldn't even save, like that's one thing.
Well, that was my question though, because it now seems to me that the holodeck is like a Nintendo game where you have to keep it turned on the entire time and
you
like
hold the reset button, put and a little hit the power.
Yeah, or put a little note on it that tells you know. Mom, Dad, do not unplug! !! Because you couldn't save.
Or that you can't shut it down safely, right? Like, I mean, there's no autosave. I mean, my computer today, if you pulled the plug on it right now, I would lose some stuff, but I wouldn't lose most of my stuff.
Right. You wouldn't lose 90% of your stuff, which is what they lose, apparently, of that program.
And, of course, every time that they show somebody's desk that has one of the little consoles on it, I have to laugh because the thing compared to like a laptop looks like a laptop from the 80s.
Yes, but it's from the future, Dan.
That thing is really powerful. Like that is a holodeck, I guess.
That's right. So they have everywhere is a holodeck. So they, they shut it down. Oh no, 90% of it is wiped out. Tom Paris has to start rebuilding his stupid Irish town. He is offended when Harry Kim is like, well, just do it over. And he's like, Harry, that's like if you lost the one copy of your brilliant masterpiece novel and you had to fill in all the details for all over again. But apparently he does it because there's an episode that has Fairhaven in it again. So,
well, speaking as someone who has lost things that they've written, I sympathize with Tom Paris about that at least. But that is why you save your work and you have backups.
Exactly. Tom Paris. And I've also been in that situation. Nothing as... I assume programming a holodeck is complicated, despite all of the evidence from every other Star Trek show I've ever seen. But I will.
Is it more than Tom Paris just saying, like, computer, create Fairhaven? Like, done.
That's my question. I don't know. So, term papers, I've certainly lost term papers and then I had to redo it. But it has been my experience that I'm just fooling myself, but the second redone version is usually better than the first one. So maybe the second episode, Fairhaven will actually be accurate.
Interesting. Well, now you've got my interest peaked.
I'm selling you on an episode that I'm not sure I've ever seen, so I cannot vouch for it.
Well, that's good marketing there.
That's right. I'm not getting paid anything for this. So they shut it down. Everybody's sad. Boo-hoo. The actor who has probably the worst Irish accent, though, is kind of saved and flickery.
He's in a bunch of stuff. He's one of those character actors that has popped up. I must have seen him in like a million things. I'm trying to remember what the he's been in. It looks like he's been in multiple other Star Trek episodes.
And I think I could be wrong, but I feel like he was in.
He's in Chris. Office.
He's in Office Space. Was he in Chris Elliott's Get a Life? Was that him?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know about that, but he was in. It looks like. Oh, he's in The Inner Light.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he plays in another hologram. Oh, well, I guess he wasn't a hologram technically in The Inner Light, but he was a psychic projection, I guess. I don't know. It's unclear what they are, but.
Yeah, I feel like he's one of he's definitely one of those character actors that you see in a ton of different things.
Yes, and
he's still going. Like, he's still active now.
He's as long as he doesn't do his Irish accent ever again, I'm okay with it. Because he was fine there. But yeah, so he's kind of okay, but there's some glitches. But Janeway goes down and calls up good old Michael and talks about, this is where she says, computer, don't let me make changes anymore because whatever. And then she leaves. And that's the end of the episode.
I felt like the end of the episode was in some ways, I thought of it as an inverse of one of my favorite episodes, or my favorite episode, In the Pale Moonlight, which is instead of erasing him at the end, she saves him at the end, and then she walks off. So it's like a happier version,
that's I guess. Right. She puts a little pin in it and says, maybe I will revisit you, Michael, when I wrap my head around whether or not I can have a relationship with a hologram.
This will take me about 6 episodes.
That's right. I'll be back in about 6 weeks when Todd Paris fixes everything. So
thanks, Tom.
So Dan, what did you think of this? Or do you, well, here's my first question. Would you like to visit Fairhaven?
I've also been to Ireland and I really like Ireland. I think it would be maybe not the top on my list of places to go in a holodeck, but it seems very pleasant and it has that idealized version of like, you know, watching some of the like PBS series or like Masterpiece Theater series that you see set in like small Irish town. And I can understand, but like, it's never. That's the whole problem with all these things. You always realize for historical fiction, like it's never as nice and clean and pretty as everybody wants to remember, right?
That's
like,
true.
It's like when people remember like the Middle Ages, right? Like, oh, see the Middle Ages and knights and swords and all that stuff. And you're like, no, things were not great there. Like there was no indoor plumbing. Like there's not, people got diseases all the time. Like they're all idealized versions. So
that's true. People used to go to the bathroom in groups. It's true. That is true. And it's disgusting. Don't ever go to the Middle Ages.
So I understand the temptation for the idealized version. But I don't know that would be on the top of my list. And I enjoyed Ireland. So you know what? I would rather go to real Ireland.
I am with you. I'd rather go to real Ireland, despite the fact of not being able to control the weather. because I think that's the central premise of why I think Janeway is so uncomfortable with her relationship. Because she can control everything about it. So there's no surprises. There's nothing. So it's kind of boring. It's just a pale imitation of reality.
Okay. Yeah. So that's not my top place to visit. You got a whole holodeck. Go someplace more exciting.
Where would you go if you had a holodeck? Man.
Well, I'm already stuck in a spaceship in the middle of nowhere, presumably. So
that is true.
I guess that's not really a great option. I have to think about that. That's a good question. There are so many places to go. Like you could go on like an African safari.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool. You could go to like Antarctica. Like that would be kind of interesting. Like I feel and safer than actual Antarctica.
Far safer, unless you turn off the safeties.
Don't turn off the safeties. It's a bad idea. I'm just saying. I feel like there are a lot of great options, but you know, we have all this other technology in the future that lets you actually visit those places. So, like
that's true. That is the tension I feel. So, well, speaking of tension, what did you think of this episode? That's a bad segue, but what did you think of this episode overall?
It wasn't, I think I probably liked it a little more than you did, but not like, it wasn't that it was a great episode. Again, I'm not a big Voyager fan, so it was not, you know, it's hard for me to step in and judge one episode in a vacuum. But I do like that it, there is like a central problem there, that there are a central like philosophical question of whether or not this person is real, and whether or not you should be like have this relationship. And Janeway's position as the captain and being sort of isolated, like I think that's an interesting issue to address. I have no idea if that's something that they go on to address further or this is kind of it, but I feel like it plants some interesting seeds.
Well, Dan, you know what people should take home? Your novel, which is available in better bookstores and probably worse bookstores near you, and on the internets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books.
All your favorite bookstores.
Your local independent bookstore, if you'd like to support independent businesses.
I'm sure they'll order it for you.
That's right. And some may have it. Who knows? But if they don't, go in there and demand that they order it. And I'm
grab them by the lapels.
And Dan, I know you're a fan of libraries, so I'm sure you wouldn't mind if people went to their local libraries and asked them to order a copy of your book.
Not at all. I would heavily endorse it. I suggest you most local libraries have a place where you can suggest books for them to purchase. So yeah, feel free to do that.
Do that. Buy the book, people. And Dan, thank you so much for joining me.